getting perspective on our lives is really crucial, I think. And our lives are always in the middle of something different. It's changing. And if I was to ask each of you, you know, what are the stories of your lives that really stand out? We'd all have some parts that would be really good, and we'd like to go back and relive them, perhaps. And there'd be other parts that we would never want to go back to again, the parts that are painful and hard, and maybe they still are having their impact. And since we had our last on live ELF, we've all been through a particular experience, everybody. And, you know, you talk to different people and they'll tell you what they've been through. The season of their life for the last 2 years has been, well, whatever it's been for you. I mean, I'm a pastor, and it involved multiple funerals for many people. It involved very strange experiences for individuals. Lives will never be the same again. Circumstances that are changed forever. And, you know, questions always being asked, you know, well, what has God got to do with this pandemic? Is God in this pandemic? And, you know, you're saying to yourself, well, look, God is in this pandemic. Everything about this is entirely part of his purposes somewhere. Can we understand it? Maybe not yet, but maybe we will get some little things that help us. And there are two really main questions when it comes to facing all of these different chapters in our lives, easy ones and hard ones and strange ones and confusing ones. And they are, first of all, what is going on and how are we going to make sense of it? Everybody is trying to do that, whether you're Christian or not. And that's why this truth is a bridging truth into the lives of other people that we may meet with. And the second question that at least I've tried to wrestle with is, how can I still make progress even when it's really, really difficult? Because if we merely just see these bad events as events to just try to get through and get beyond, we've missed something. And the good events as well, which we just enjoy, we've missed something too, because every event in life and every part of life, every season of life has some bigger purpose. And underneath that purpose is certainly the question of hope. Where is the hope in this? Because we don't need to have answers. We need maybe some answers. We're never going to get all the answers, but we do need hope. I often find on a Sunday, you know, when I conduct worship as we do for years on years, one of the things in my mind is that we need to be sending people, always sending people away sending people away with hope. You know, if you send people away without hope, you failed, I think. So no matter what we're dealing with, there is hope in there somewhere, and we have to help in that way. Now, we all have a story, so to help you, I'll give you a little bit of background of my own story. We were doing this in our network, giving two truths and a lie, you know, in order to sort of do an icebreaker last night, two truths and a lie. But one of the truths that they all thought was a lie was, I'm a third generation pastor. And so my father and my grandfather were both pastors as well. And it's kind of unusual maybe in some ways, but my father's pastoral life and experience was quite short because he had an affair with somebody in the congregation, and he eloped with a young woman, well, a woman 20 years younger than him. But the interesting thing is that when you have chapters in your life like this, people seem to think of them as being destructive and difficult and really maybe not that helpful, but they can be really helpful too. Not at the time maybe, but as we start to understand the way God works in all of life, we start to see there's hope in that. And I certainly have lived long enough to see some of that. And even when people sin, you know, God is going to work through that in ways for good in the lives of many people. Else, if that were not the case, there would be no hope for any of us, when you think about it, because we all do. The level and the nature of the sin may not change the principle, but the truth is that we all do, and God is there. About 6 years after that, my mother developed cancer and then she died. So I was left with my two sisters, and there was no family network. My parents were both only children. So my father had no brothers or sisters. My mother had no brothers or sisters. So we had no cousins. We had no aunts or no uncles. And so that was it. Just the two of us, the three of us, this little kind of island in this world in the 1960s, where there was really, the world was not so kind of open to talk about these things. And so how do you solve all these problems? Well, we were a problem, I think, to people. But the only thing is, my mum had been a very, very transparent Christian. She was heartbroken because of her personal circumstances, but she didn't stop living her life. She didn't stop serving. We had to move from one town to another. We had to retrace our steps back to where she began, which must have been very difficult for her, but like Naomi and Ruth. And she just got on with life. I don't know if you've ever listened to Elizabeth Elliot, the missionary, Bible teacher, author, et cetera, who widow of Jim Elliot, when she said that when her husband died, she came to wrestle with, I mean, what that was after 27 months of marriage, you know, and had a small child of 2 years of age, or maybe just about, and how to figure this out. And what rescued her was this statement, which is really a bit of prose, but she said, distilled it into this statement, you do the next thing. You just do the next thing. And that is not a theological thing. It's a very practical thing, but I'll tell you, it has rescued so many people in life when they're in difficult places. And my mother just did the next thing. And the next thing was just to look after three children, and then her father who came to live with her, and then he died shortly after that. So that was the next thing. And then she just continued. But she had four old unmarried cousins, bachelors. And so when she had been a child, she was sent to live with them because her mother died when she was 15 months old. So she was sent to live with them and a sister of theirs who sort of brought her up. And when she died, then I was sent to live with these four now much, much older men who were like all kind of like two generations older than I was. And it was like stepping back into Ireland of about 40 years earlier. And for a young boy going into that world was like something very strange. So you're confused, you're faced with all of these strange things happening in your life and you're trying to make sense of it. I came to faith, or I came to an experience of an understanding of the Lord in my life when I was 9, but it didn't really take massively deep, you know, rootedness in my life. And I think I was, when my mum died, then I kind of lost my way quite a bit. The only place they could send my sisters and I were to boarding schools, which then were interesting places. They were a bit like some of those old-fashioned stories you read of from an earlier generation. Boys' schools, girls' schools. Our school was a very oppressive place. Violence, abuse, and bullying, and all that sort of stuff was what went on in it. So you had to sort of survive. There were 300 boys boarding in it and about 700 who were not. And you just had to try and make sense of it as best you could and find a way through it. I had a very profound experience when I was 19 over a period of several months when God brought me back to himself again. My life had unraveled very considerably to that point, so that I was not involved in church for several years and had really very little contact with Christian people. I didn't possess a Bible or anything like that. So God brought me to a place he just brought me home, really, and he pursued me. That's the only way I could describe it. He did pursue me kindly and to that place. So then once you get to that place, you start your thinking process and you've got decades to think about your life. And so as I've reflected back, I'm now 65 years of age, I can look back down the decades of my life and try and make some sense. And how do you make sense of all of that? It's not always easy to. You carry with you a lot of stuff you've got to deal with. Issues of forgiveness, issues of complexity. Here are people who are Christians living lives that seem very non-Christian, so much going on that's very painful. I had two sisters, and they didn't come out of the story very well. They totally rejected everything to do with the Christian faith. One of them died at 47 and was buried as a humanist. That's painful when you think of where the casualties come in this. My other sister is still very, very angry about all of this, and has been unwell for quite a long time, and I think that is part of the story as well. So as I try to make sense of this and try to get a perspective and to recover perspective, I need to go to somewhere where I'm going to find some foundation. Where do you make sense of things? Because that's really what you're trying to do. And, you know, if you go to a normal therapist or a psychologist, they will, I mean, you're a gift to them if you come with a story like that. They love people like that because they'll find in all sorts of their theories being worked out. And my sister went to one of those, and she ended up writing a novel, which helped her, I think, greatly, because she was able to sort of put a lot of that down. But what she put down was the interpretations of her psychologist and therapist, I think, a little bit. And that was her way of interpreting and looking at it. Very difficult. I turn to the Bible and to Scripture. And so when I think about the story, and everybody has a story, I come to this place here, and it's the providence of God. Providence of God is indeed a wonderful doctrine, and it is in the Heidelberg Catechism. And I know it may be ancient, but it's very, very helpful, this phrase. For the benefit of the recording, I read, God's providence is his almighty and ever-present power, whereby, as with his hand, he upholds heaven and earth and all creatures, and so governs them that leaf and blade, rain and drought, fruitful and barren years, food and drink, health and sickness, riches and poverty, indeed all things come to us not by chance, but by his fatherly hand. That is an anchor point, I think. It is really, you could say, providence is looking at everything from God's perspective. Life is really very confusing when you only see things from your perspective. So now let me take you forward a number of years from that very early stage, 1996. It's 30 years after the death of my mother. And I'm in the capital city of Prague. Yeah, it's an interesting story. It kind of ties my life to that country a little bit, where you find things like this. I'm sitting in a room with a number of men from a church, and I'm there because I'm a part of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. I'm there to sort of sit down and listen with them, and what could we do together? Could we collaborate, you know? And they write the names of the individual people down on the page. So this elderly gentleman, his name was Jerzy Otto, I recall, he wrote my name down, and then he said, oh, I know somebody of that name. He seemed, I think he was around about 70 years of age at the time. So I thought, well, okay. I said, you mean here in the Czech Republic? And he said, no. And I said, right. He said, in 1947, I went to Belfast and I studied in a theological college there. And I had a roommate, and there, that was their name. So I said, that was my father. So then I started to put the kind of probabilities into that. If you think about this, well, I think there were 10 million people in the Czech Republic then. I'm sure that's about right. So this is one out of 10 million people. I am also one out of so many million in Northern Ireland or Ireland. When you multiply these things then by 40 years or so, or maybe 50 years back to the original time, okay, I wasn't even born. You have to take that into account. You're not born. And God has brought these two people together, right, from across the world. In 1947 was the final year before the Iron Curtain, because you couldn't have left the country in the same freedom in 1948. So you kind of begin to wonder, what the whole story is. Now, I don't know what the story, I mean, we don't know what the story was because they were all pursuing their own stories. But in the providence of God, we realize that he was pursuing his story. So that when you find yourself sitting there all those years later, almost 50 years later from that time, you think, this is a God moment. You say, this God is at work in this story. So it sort of gives you that sense of God being providentially caring for your world and your life, even though you've not known it and personally at times, because it's like silence for long periods and then speaking. So I go back. No, before I finish that, what happened was he said, I've written a book. Would you mind taking this and giving it to your father? Because he said, how is he? I said, oh, I think he's okay. I didn't really know how he was because I'd never met him. So I took the book and I put it in my briefcase and I came back. But then you have to add another part of the story, for there's another man that I meet with to pray with every Wednesday at that period, and he has some properties in Scotland. And I said to him, look, you know, I know my father lives in Edinburgh somewhere. About 500,000 people live in Edinburgh. I said, but I tell you what, see, next time you go, I made a promise to this man in the Czech Republic, I would get this book to my father. Would you mind taking this book and seeing if you could find him? And it's up for a bit of an adventure. I mean, what was it to him? So he did. He went and he just went through the phone book and he rang, just telephoned, went down the names of all the K Kirkpatricks. And there, Scotland's kind of Kirkpatricks, kind of, you know what I mean? So there are quite a few Kirkpatricks. It's a bit like Smith or Brown and there. And eventually he found him. I can't remember how many. It was like sort of maybe 20-some or whatever. And that was a bit of a shock to my father, who had gone to Scotland, had broken every link to Ireland, had a new family who didn't know he had a previous family. His wife obviously knew, but his children knew nothing about this. He was now worshiping in a church there. He had had an experience of the grace of God that had transformed him and brought him back to faith. But that was all a story that was going on there in parallel. But now you see how God's providence is beginning to work out in all of those strange and confusing and nearly conflicting situations. And, you know, how do we ever make sense of that? Except that, you know, as it says in Isaiah 55, you know, that as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. You know, it would be possible to think that our actions and other people's actions upon us are of little consequence, since God is the big player, and we think our part seems a bit passive. And yet, we are all actively pursuing things, and God is sovereignly watching over those things so that he is fully involved in it. I kind of think of it a little bit like this. You know, this is if you ever bake, you know, I don't do much baking, but my wife does a lot of baking, and one of my daughters does a lot of baking. So here we are, we've got sugar and yeast and salt and water and eggs, and some are sweet and some are sharp. And the process that takes place is in the mixing of it all together. And that's the crucial thing. It's the mixing of it all together that produces something at the end of it. If life were only sweet things, you know, it would be like, it wouldn't be very nice. I mean, if you can, maybe you have a sweet tooth, but there's a limit to the amount of sweet things you like. And it takes them all. For example, at one period I was watching my daughter baking, and, you know, the amount of sugar that goes into things is incredible. And I mean, if you ever watch, some of you maybe bake, I mean, I was shocked when I saw the amount of sugar she was putting in. I said, do you mean to say that's the amount of sugar that I would be eating? She says, mm-hmm. And all the other ingredients that went with it. And I said, why not try it with a bit less sugar in that? She was making meringues. And of course, if you know anything about meringues, I only know now, you need to put the right ingredients in or it doesn't work. And she says, well, I'll show you what it's like, Dad. And I said, well, have them go. And, well, they all had to go in the bin. And, you know, it was something about the process that was involved in that. Involved all those ingredients that were very different. but the process produced something that was really good. And there's something about our lives being in the process. You know, we're in the process, and there's sweet, and there's bitter, and there's hard, and there's soft, and there's things we like, and there's things we hate. But put it all together, it takes us back to those words, you know, of the whole thing. You know, it's that catechism says that, you know, it's the rain and drought, it's the fruitful and barren years, it's the health and sickness, it's the riches and poverty. All of those things are in there together. And by his fatherly hand come to us, because he knows what we need. Now, I know you're beginning, it certainly would be part of my thinking, yes, but what about all those unpleasant, nasty things that are going on? It's not easy. I mean, nobody wants that life. I mean, if you can choose the life you want, you'll not choose that. You'll choose an easier path. But maybe you'll not. Maybe you'll not choose an easier path if you know that the end result is something really quality, something really good. Because people who want to be, you know, at the top of their game, you know, whatever it may be, they realize that in order to reach that particular place, they're going to have to go through a degree of difficulty to get there, whether it's, you know, an athlete striving for Olympic gold, or whether it's somebody for intellectual pursuits. You know, they'll really have to pour their lives in. They'll lose sleep. They'll struggle. There'll be times whenever they hate it and they'll say, what am I doing in this? But if they keep always in their mind that this process that they're in the middle of is leading to something really good, that will give them hope. Because it's hope in every season of life we're thinking about. We're not thinking about, you know, happiness in every season of life. That's a different thing. And I'm not really convinced that God's purposes for my life are just happiness. At least not as defined by our kind of general sort of culture of today. So I think that all of those grace-enabled choices that we make, combined with all the others, are going to work for the good ultimately that God has for us. So what does it benefit us to know that God is providentially at work in our lives? What's the benefit of it? And the benefit, I think, is that we can be patient in adversity, thankful in prosperity, and with a view to the future, we can have that firm confidence, because that's another catechism. Going to number 28 in the Heidelberg Catechism, it says this and asks, what does it benefit us to know that God has created all things and still upholds them by his providence? So what's the benefit of it? And somebody says, yeah, well, to know that God is involved and God is providentially, you know, behind all of these things, that's okay. That would really be, that actually be a problem for some people, because they say, if that's the sort of God, I don't want to know him. And that's another question, of course, but I think when we think about the process and the ultimate good that comes out, we can then begin to see that maybe we have prejudged or misjudged God at times when we thought that was unkind, in the same way that Job did when he was in the middle of the process. In the middle of the process, he couldn't understand it. And as we read through the chapters of Job, we too find and feel the pain and say, whew, that was hard. And then, of course, we know the last chapter of Job, he's saying, you know, all I can do is just zip my lips, say nothing, because I realize it's way beyond me. I now understand that. That's a faith expression that's not hard for a person that doesn't have that faith and can't see it yet. But the answer to this, what does it benefit us to know that God is working providentially, is we can be patient in adversity, thankful in prosperity, and with a view to the future, we can have a firm confidence in our faithful God and Father, that no creature shall ever separate us from his love, for all creatures are so completely in his hand that without his will, they cannot so much as move. It makes us ask the question then, who is God? Can we trust him? Can we trust him? That's the question then. Now, one of the films that many of us like, The Wizard of Oz, the yellow brick road and so forth. Well, you know that the Wizard of Oz is this small, little, pathetic man behind the machine who's shouting and all the rest of it. And, you know, but God is not like that. God is not like the Wizard of Oz. So what is the answer then to all of those painful things? There are a number of answers. It's the question, why is there suffering at all in the world? We know that there is suffering in the world because we know our Savior suffered. Had there been no suffering in the world, there would be no cross. There would be no cross because the cross is the ultimate suffering. If there's no cross, there'd be no redemption. Of course, you might say, well, that's a bit tricky. I say, yes, it may be, but that is the truth. Don or D.A. Carson describes it this way. He said that in those things where we see total good, God is standing directly behind him. In those things where we see an evil involved in some way, God is standing asymmetrically behind them. It's a way of trying to explain something. I don't know that there's a perfect explanation. Many, many apologists and thinkers and Christian thinkers have tried to give their explanation to why things are so, these hard and difficult things, and sort of try to explain it in a way that makes it okay for us. And I think that you need to go back to the Bible, and there is at least a snapshot in Scripture through the life of Joseph. We're not going to look at all the life of Joseph, but no, there are. Joseph is able to say at that point where his brothers come to meet him, and there's the real sort of moment, as it were, you know, you meant this for evil, but God meant it for good. And it wasn't just that, you know, God kind of was the fourth emergency service running after the accident. I mean, God was involved in it from the very beginning. He said, I mean, God has purpose here. God has purpose that's much bigger than you or I, much bigger than our family. God has redemption purpose that is kind of like the whole narrative from Genesis to Revelation. God is in there. That's what this is all about. It's not just about you guys, and it's not just about me. It's so much bigger. So I think that, you know, you can look backwards then as you think about this. When you look backwards to the events, it causes you to stop and say, I need to be cautious about how I interpret things, and not to be too quick to come to the point of saying it's a good or a bad thing. Max Lucado, in one of his books, gives the illustration of people coming to a quick judgment. He gives the illustration of an elderly farmer in a medieval time who has a number of horses, and there's this very wild horse out in the countryside. And so his horses, having been out and for a time, somehow this other very attractive horse has attached itself to him and comes to him. And all the people in the village are saying, oh, it's wonderful. Yeah, it's brilliant. You're so, so lucky. Look at that. And he says to them, well, I don't know. I don't know whether I'm fortunate or not. And they think, stupid old man. But then, of course, the old man starts to take the horse and try to train the horse. And in the process of training the horse, his son falls off and breaks his leg. And then the people say, oh, now we understand why you were so hesitant to say anything. You see, well, your son's no use to you. He can't work anymore for you. The old man says, well, I don't know. He says, I don't think I would just be so quick to say anything about it. And then one of the other, in the area of that period being a sort of a period where we have small nations, the war breaks out. And so the king, he says, it's time for all the young fit men of the nation to be conscripted into the army. And so the men come around and say, oh, now we know now. It's a good thing because your son's the only son and all ours are going to have to go to war, but your son can stay at home. And the old man says, well, you've learned nothing because you don't know whether it's a good thing or not. And I remember that story and thinking about it, saying it's a very helpful thing not to be so quick to make judgments looking back, because we just do not see. If we understand that God providentially controls the events of our lives, and he is a God who is good and has good purposes, and his overarching purpose is far bigger than us, but if we are in there as his children, it's a good ultimate purpose for us, because he's going to bring us to glory. And he's also going to use us to be a blessing to others on the way. So Looking back, we need to be cautious. Looking inward, which of course is very easy, and the story of Joseph is a wonderful story, and I so identify with him, as I'm sure you do at times in your life. You know, you think of how everything can go against you. You have no control of it. Did you want to be sold? Did you were just like trying to do the good thing? Next thing, you end up being sent up. Then you try and do another good thing, you know, and you try to resist temptation, and then you end up being put in prison. Then do another good thing, and then the guys who you help as they one escapes and gets on with life, and the other, of course, doesn't. They forget you, and you're thinking. You look inside and you say, "What am I doing all this for?" It's a very tempting thing to do, but of course, God has incorporated in Scripture a lot of wonderful illustrative material like this for us. That is not just illustrative, but it's, you know, it's much deeper than that. But at least it is that, to teach us, be patient. There's a wisdom in looking outwards. I'm not going to take time because our time is going to disappear here. There's a necessity in looking upwards. But I always have been reminded that life is onwards. Don't look back too much. There's not a great deal of help in always looking back and digging over everything and researching everything and trying to trace your way through everything with a fine-tooth comb. Sometimes it's better to be able to, you know, forget those things that are behind and press on, I think. That doesn't mean to say that we shouldn't try to, you know, deal with some of them. I think there are a lot of people who find themselves stuck. You know, they take on an identity out of their trouble. I'm a divorced person. I'm a victim. I'm whatever it is. And I understand we need to address that and we need help. But the help is going to come to us through understanding truth, fundamentally. And then there's pastoral help that comes alongside us when the Lord gives people to us. Jim Packer, in his little book, it's Concise Theology, I saw a copy of it on the book table, and it may well have been overlooked by other people. If it is, just go and buy it if you don't have it, because it's one of those tiny little books that you'll use as a reference. I use it, I'm sure, once a week. He says this: the doctrine of God's providence teaches Christians that they are never in the grip of blind forces. All that happens to them is divinely planned, and each event comes as a new summons to trust, obey, and rejoice, knowing that all is for one's spiritual and eternal good. So when we start to apply this, well, I think there are three things there. When you think about that statement about, you know, that it grants us the capacity to, you know, accept and to rejoice. First of all, it's the power of explanation. Providence is capable of giving us explanatory power to understand and say, I don't know everything, but this one thing I do know. And if you consider all of the other people in the world who have a similar story to yours, because suffering comes to everybody, trouble comes to everybody, they do not have equally an explanatory part. Well, they may have, you know, if they're an evolutionary materialist, the only answer they have is that suffering is the result of being living in a world of evolutionary suffering. The strongest win, the weakest don't, and you just happen to get the wrong straw that day, which doesn't give you any hope, of course. That's why the Christian worldview gives us hope in every season. So there's that sense of explanatory power here. Our Christian faith really has that in painful times. And that is, it doesn't change them entirely, but it creates stability. And that's very helpful. Stability, that is the second thing. Knowing there is a plan. You know, in the events of some painful situations in our lives, we can have stability. You may go through something that's very difficult, but if you understand that behind it there is a good purpose, you can remain stable in it. You say, I know this is going to be hard, but I know that's what I should expect. There is kindness behind this somewhere. It may be a surgical thing, it may be something like that. You know, for me, I go to the dentist and I find it a bit of a stressful thing. It goes back to my childhood, which is indelibly imprinted on your mind, though the experience today is so much better, but the sounds and the smells, all of it immediately triggers off in my mind stress, like taking the dog to the vet, you know? And then there's the capacity for joy, because, okay, the capacity to have explanation and then stability, but then joy. Joy is moving on to a new place, isn't it? It's okay for people to say, well, you can grin and bear it. You know, it'll do you good. But to actually reach the place where you can find some joy in it, to even be glad in it and find the capacity to thank God in it. I appreciate that this is not something that happens easily nor quickly to many people. And that's why I'm always cautious to sort of speak in any trite way to anyone when they're in the middle of their trouble, because they haven't got to that place yet. I mean, I would have to say, if you had spoken to me in my 30s, I most likely wouldn't have been able to just express this in the same way. I was still very much trying to figure out my story, but it was only then as things changed that you're able to start to see how it works out. And I'm sorry for my brother here, who wasn't able to be in at the beginning. And I can't even see your name. Emmanuel, I was just saying at the beginning, I put this in a biographical sort of style because it's the story I know best. It's the only one I can stand over, you know, and tell for truthfully. I can tell others secondhand, but not as truthfully as your own. But my father had left us when I was a child, and my mother then died shortly after that, and then life was chaotic and so forth. So trying to figure out, you know, hope in all seasons of life. And then in a providential way, being brought into contact with my father 40 years later through a God's grace and his providence. And so the book goes back to my father, and as a means, it became a means of connecting us again. Now, I wouldn't be one of those people who is wanting to chase after, you know, and say, look, if you're happy, you're happy. And I'm okay with that. You know, I'm happy too. And let's get on with life. But if you want to hang out together, that's all right too. And so a year later, I went to Scotland to visit my father, took my wife, and we had, I think, three children then. We had a fourth later on, and we had a meeting. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like the television's version, you know. It's not, wow, this is great. It's hard. It's difficult. It's all that you would expect in two people who haven't had any communication and don't understand the stories of each other's lives. And it becomes a new process of how to build a relationship when sorry is never said. Okay. And you can never ask for sorry, because if you ask for sorry, it's not, you know, has to be given. You know? So and it's an interesting little cameo. You've maybe never been in Edinburgh. You can imagine there's a big city street in your big town nearest you, a street that's like very public, a big street. And on the main street in Edinburgh, I come in from one end and my father comes in from the other end. I come from the airport. He comes in from where he lives in a little suburb of Edinburgh. And we meet in the middle, just under this big statue. And we go into there's a department store that has a cafe. And it's a poor cafe. The coffee is terrible in it, but it's kind of that sort of, you know, retro style. It's my father's style. Anyway, I was happy to put up with that. We go in there. We meet as two individuals. And we go in and we sit down for about 2 hours and we talk. And I listen. We come out and we go our separate ways. Now, if you had the drone picture of that, you know, I can imagine some of these, you know, cinematography people putting that into, I mean, I feel as though I'm in the middle of something like that when I do it, you know, and I'm, you know, zooming down on this. What is this going on in this? This is the journey to try and find your way back into this. And you think that you're getting there somehow. And it's a hard and painful experience for both of us. And that continued for 20 years. And in the last few months before my father died, he contacted me one night. I can still remember, these things stay with you, you know, these moments. And I'd been visiting, come out into the cold north coast of Northern Ireland in a cold winter night. And my phone rings in my pocket and I answer it and it's my father and we have a short, brief conversation, you know, as you do, like, how are you and whatnot. And then he says, I've had a conversation with his wife. I mean, I don't know what to call her because she's not my mother, you know, but I just call her name. And he says, we've had a conversation and we want to ask you not to come to my funeral. So I'm trying to process that again. And so, but you know, I say, that's okay. You know, whatever, that's okay. So about 2 months later, he dies. And I have a conversation with him before he dies. We never talk about that again, that situation. But, you know, you have to then start, you got to live out your truth, you know, because you're walking home and you're saying, and God, this is hard, but this is good. And there's a phrase here that I find really helpful. I'm going to give you four lines, little prose that you may have heard. But for me, underneath all of this is the hope in all of this is not that my story is going to be changed, but that as I get a slightly different picture by embracing the truth that God gives, I can then accept the situation and I will be changed. And you see, that was what struck me that night. Some people writing the story might want to end it in a different way. You know, they would want to say, and everything was good, you know, and it was happy ever after. But it wasn't. But what happened in that story was that God had been changing me. And then one night, some years along the way, I came across a phrase, a little prose by John Piper, and I'll finish with it in a minute. But before, I just want to give, this is just a little piece of counsel. How do we assist other people? Because we meet people every day. I mean, in my role as a pastor for the last 40 years, I've been engaged in dealing with people and all sorts of painful things. You don't try and fix them. That's the first thing. And I say that to people all the time I meet. I say, I cannot fix you. It's not my job to fix you. But I can listen to you and I'll walk with you through this. You know, I'll listen to you and I'll walk through this journey with you. And I think that if it's appropriate for you, you can say to people, look, I'm going to walk as long as this takes. 2 or 3 years ago, I had a frozen shoulder and I got all the injections and those things to help me get it back to normal. And I went to physiotherapy and in Northern Ireland, they would give you 6 weeks physiotherapy and then they'd kick you out more or less. And that's the way it works. It's kind of like, you know, unless you're an American, you good private health care, you know, you're not going to get as well looked after. Anyway, I went to the physio and I said to the girl, I said, you know, she said, this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to put you through these and we're going to learn exercises and so forth. And I said, brilliant. I said, and will it be for 6 weeks? And she said, no. She said, I will work with you as long as it takes until you are able to be back to normal, as long as you work with me. And I said, well, you don't worry, I'm going to work, because I know what it was to lose the capacity to move my arm. And she stayed with me the whole time. She worked faithfully for 1 year until I could get the mobility back into my arm. And I thought that really was a big lesson, you know. How long will you walk with people? And I think I'll walk with you as long as I can. You have to minister to the moment because the moment is what you've got, you know, and it changes all the time. And I just keep praying all the time that they will discover the same truth that I've discovered. And this is the poem here. It's a bit of prose that John Piper wrote. And it is this, that it is, God gives us grace, but it's not grace to bar what is not bliss, nor flight from all distress, but this, the grace that orders our trouble and pain, and then in the darkness is there to sustain. That is providence. The grace that orders our trouble and pain, and is then there in the darkness is there to sustain. So that's why I think we can have hope in every season of life.